Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
But oh, so neat and sweet Georgia Brown. They all sigh and wanna cry for sweet Georgia Brown. I'll tell you just why. You know I don't lie, not much. It's been said she knocks him dead, but she lands him down. It's a shame, what a shame, how she goes him down. Fellers, she can't kick it off, fellers. She ain't met Jugahudja, named her Jugahudja, claimed her sweet Georgia Brown. No gal made a Jugahudja, and a sweet Georgia Brown. To that feet, but oh so neat, and sweet Georgia Brown. I'm sighing, what a cry for sweet Georgia Brown. I'll tell you just why.
Right then. Greetings. Hello. And thank you. Thank you for joining us today on Topically Yours on the Blake Radio Network. I'm your host, Deirdre Schuler. And as always on the show today, we're going to delve into the lives of the movers and shakers within the entertainment world. And if you're a lover of jazz, you're going to enjoy the show today as we're going to step back into the time and reacquaint ourselves with the performers of the past. And people so important that even though they're no longer with us, they have left behind an essential part of themselves, their music. And in that sense, they are still alive today. My guest today is Roz Nixon, who's a writer and producer, which is just part of the talent she possesses. Ms. Nixon has produced events in New York, Philadelphia, Miami, Las Vegas, and as far as Istanbul. The events she has promoted include jazz, gospel, and R&B, and as part of live shows, parties, and seminars, which is part of the live shows and seminars she presents. And she's also engaged in art exhibits and book signings. Her company, Roz Nixon Entertainment, is a multifaceted organization that has also been involved in film and television, wherein Nixon has worked with producers, directors, and casting agents to find the right person for the right part. Through her company, Ms. Nixon has casted for films like Unfaithful, starring Richard Gere, The Devil Wears Prada, starring Meryl Streep, and Music and Lyrics, starring Hugh Grant, as well as produced talent for commercials, work for companies like Heineken, Verizon, and the New York Knicks. Her most recent endeavor is in dinner theater. She will be producing S.S. Nirvana, A Story of Love and Jazz on the High Seas, starting in October, specifically October 20th, which will be at the Minton's Playhouse in New York City. And it will focus on the talents of artists such as Ella Fitzgerald, Nat King Cole, Louis Armstrong, Dinah Washington, and Sarah Vaughan. And my other guests include Charles Bartlett, who will play the role of Louis Armstrong in S.S. Nirvana, and in his own right is the leader of the Charles Bartlett Jazz Ensemble and co-founder of the legendary Bartlett Contemporaries Band. He's a seasoned trumpeter, music educator who holds a master's degree in applied music from NYU and is acclaimed professor of jazz studies at York College. He has performed at special events, such notables as Oprah Winfrey, Spike Lee, and Essence Communications, as well as performed with such jazz giants as Omar Hakim, Jennifer Holliday, and the late Stanley Turrentine and Dizzy Gillespie. And lastly, but certainly not least, is Lil Phillips, who performs as Dinah Washington in S.S. Nirvana. Miss Phillips, whom I've had the pleasure of hearing sing last night at the Cafe and Lounge Serafina, is a former viola student at the prestigious High School of Music and Art, and after graduation, Liz received a B.A. M.A. from the City Opera. From City University, and later studied classical gospel vocal techniques with Amory Taylor, who is the director of Harlem's Opera. She has performed from New York to Istanbul and stood center stage at the prestigious Birdland and appeared at the JVC Jazz Festival. Some say her voice is reminiscent of Dinah Washington, so she is perfect for her role in S.S. Nirvana. But anyway, I can hear my guests eagerly waiting in the background. Let's introduce them and welcome them to the show. Greetings to all.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Greetings to you.
And you're quite welcome, everyone. Well, I'd like to start by getting the background of each of my guests so the listeners can get acquainted with you. So let me start with Roz Nixon. Mm-hmm. Where were you born and raised, and what drew you to the world of entertainment?
Well, I was born and raised in Jamaica, Queens. I guess what drew me to the world is both to the world of music. Both my parents loved music, and my mother's cousin, Freddie Scott, who had a hit song in the 60s, Hey Girl, which has been recorded many, many times over and over again. He had a hit record in the 60s, so he and his wife lived in an apartment, but my parents always had a house with a big backyard. And so whenever my uncle wanted to throw, Uncle Freddie, we called him, wanted to throw a party, he would have it at our house. And so many, everybody would be there, like Jerry Butler and Wilson Tickett and Hugh Masekela, and all these people would always be there. So I would always be around all kinds of music, and always loved music, and it seemed, even though I thought I was going to go to law school, it seemed like a natural transition, if you will, because I was always around it.
Well, that's a good reason, and why don't I ask the same question of Lil Phillips and Charles Bartlett, so I'll start with you, Lil.
Oh, okay. I was born in Miami, Florida, but I didn't know much about Miami. My family came from the Bahamas, and they moved to Miami and New York, and I was one of the ones who migrated to New York as a young lady. So I grew up in Harlem. I really call myself a Harlemite. because I lived the Harlemite life. My mother was a singer. She sang semi-classical music, you know. And my brother was a doo-wopper. He sang on the street with his friends. They had a group. In fact, they cut a record, too. And they would always rehearse in my house. And I would sit around and listen to that music. I, as a Harlemite, I always went to the Apollo Theater. It was cheap at that time. I don't know, cheap enough for children to go. That's certainly the case. And my brothers, my friends, and I, we lived in the Apollo Theater. I would sit through, you know, three shows because I wanted to see what costume they were going to have in the next show. It was always different. All the old R&B groups came there, and the jazz greats also. I studied violin in school. I was glad that I was put into that, because I think I wanted to be a nurse or something crazy like that. I went to music and art and studied violin and viola for 6 years. And after that, I did go into the regular work market, but I kept doing my singing. I sang with groups. And in fact, the background I have is not the same as Dinah's, but I think I've reached up to her now. She had a gospel background. I started out singing pop tunes, and Broadway was, my mother used to take us to Broadway shows. So in music and art, I was also singing on the side. And after high school, I was singing with the group. My husband, my late husband, Jim Phillips, had a group, and I sang with them. And I thought I was singing, you know, regular, but everybody was saying, oh, she's a jazz singer. What a jazz singer. So I just naturally am a jazz singer. I guess that's what I listen to. I listen to the, Gloria Lynn, Nina Simone, Ella. My mother had those records, Ella and Sarah and Dinah, my absolute favorite. So I think I naturally came in to be a singer, a jazz singer, and singing my favorite singer's songs. I'm so happy to be doing that in SS Nirvana.
All right, and now Charles.
Hello, everybody. Sure.
Hello.
Well, I was born and raised, I should say born and raised in Brooklyn. I moved out to Queens at an early age, and that's really where the music for me really took off. My mother was a piano player, and, of course, I used to listen to her play the piano. I was never really interested in the piano per se, but I used to listen to her and jam with her, you know, when I was a little guy. And she would put on records and we'd listen, and we would listen to all of the greats. I fell in love with the trumpet at an early age. I listened to Louis Armstrong, of course, Dizzy Gillespie and Miles. And at an early age, both of my parents recognized that I could literally tell the difference between Louis Armstrong, Dizzy Gillespie, and Miles Davis. So that was, you know, at 5 and 6 years old, I was, you know, able to discern the various styles between the three legendary trumpet players. As I grew up, as I said, we moved to Queens and started my music education at Andrew Jackson High School. And in high school, that was really the beginning of it for me and my brother. My brother, I have a brother that's a sax player, and together we started the band Bartlett Contemporaries. So Bartlett Contemporaries have been the progenitor of everything musical for me. Of course, you know, along with my mom, just lighting that fire and igniting that fire. Usually someone has to, you know, turn on the ignition, and my mom was it. So basically, once I went to Andrew Jackson High School, I got involved with the music program. It wasn't music and art, but it was sort of the music and art of Queens, because at that time, we had not only a concert, well, most high schools had a concert band and an orchestra, but we had a concert band, an orchestra, beginning band, junior band, stage band, Madrigal Society, a Baroque band. We played Baroque music. We had music theory and harmony. And so it was a full service, in effect, music school, actually, high school. When I graduated from high school, I went into the second year of theory because I had theory in college, theory in high school, rather, at Andrew Jackson. So when I started at NYU, I just bypassed the first year and went right into the second year. So it was a great school. So Bartlett Contemporary started along, And that was my band, and is my band, myself and my brother co-lead it together. And that band has taken me quite a few places. It's taken me all over. It's taken me to the Caribbean, to Canada, up and down the Eastern Seaboard, playing with the likes of the Commodores, and playing for Oprah Winfrey and Spike Lee. So the band has been a whirlwind of progress for me over the years. And then we come to my good friend, Roz Nixon, and she decided to, hey, Charles, can you do Louis Armstrong? Well, never did it before, but I did it when Roz asked me, and we pulled it off.
And he did it quite well, too. Let me say that. I said to Charles's brother, after I had written the play, I said, Carl, do you think Charles might want to do or be able to do Louis Armstrong? And his brother's such an optimist. He says, oh, don't worry. He can do it. He can definitely do it. So to go back a little bit, I wrote the play because I love jazz. I'm like everybody else's conversation on this call. I love all music. I studied ballet for 10 years, so I like classical music. My parents.
No, we want to identify that it's Roz talking, right?
Yes, it's Roz. Yes,
okay.
It's Roz.
So the audience knows who's speaking.
Yes. My father liked jazz, so I like jazz. You know, my mother liked R&B and blues, so do I. So I like it all. But I have to say that I really have a love for many of the jazz artists, not just their music or their voices or their how they play the instruments, but the way they put the music together and what they added to the music makes
me love
it more.
Well, let me interrupt you there and ask you, because many people hear the term producer, but they don't actually know what a producer entails. What can you explain to the listener what is required for one to produce a show or an event?
You know, it can mean two things very succinctly. It can be the person who just brings all the proceeds to make it come together, whether it's money, venue, whatever it makes to take to get that car running, that production running. That can be the producer. And it's also the person that kind of pulls it all together. So I'm the person that pulls it all together. There have been a couple of different producers, actually, for the show. I wrote the show approximately 3 years ago, and it's been up and running, up and down running for those 3 years. And so it's had executive producers, meaning people who just brought the finances to the table and made the show run. And it's had me, kind of like the glue of pulling it together. So I wrote the show. It is a play, not just a review. And the show takes place on a cruise ship in a magical time and place. You don't really know what time, if it's the 50s or the 60s or the 70s, because it's music from all those eras. And it takes place in the nightclub of a woman by the name of Madame Royale, who was a former singer herself, who sang with the Count Basie band. She is fictional and not a real person at all. She was a singer and decided that she didn't want to be on the road anymore, and she didn't want to be a girl singer in the band anymore, so she opens up a nightclub. But because she did have that past, she has affiliations with these different big singers, the one you mentioned earlier, Armstrong, Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, so on. And when she invites them to come on the cruise, because Madame Royale is aboard the SS Nirvana cruise ship. So whenever she invites them to come aboard and sail and perform, they do that. And that's basically what the show is about.
Now, you say there's some romance in the show. How does that come together?
Yeah. Well, you know, cruise ships can be very romantic. All of us, I think, on this phone have been on a cruise ship.
Absolutely.
You're out at sea and on the beautiful blue water, and with all that beautiful music being sung or played by the different people, sometimes people fall in love. And so we have a couple of love affairs brewing aboard SS Nirvana in Madame Royale Supper Club. our saxophone player is in love with one of the very prestigious guests. Madam has a thing for the captain. So there's a couple of little love affairs brewing there on the ship.
Who are the other cast members?
Well, we have a few of the, as you know, we have Sarah Vaughan, and we have Nat King Cole, and did I name everybody? And we have Madame Royale, who also sings in the play. But, you know,
Ella.
And Ella, that's right. So, you know, as I think, I don't know if you mentioned that we open October 22nd. We are matinees. And it's dinner.
I thought it was the 20th. Is the 20th or the 22nd?
It's the 20th. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. October,
right.
Tuesday.
Right.
October 20th. And we are Tuesday and Wednesday of every week that follows up to the second week of November at the legendary Mittens Playhouse. And this is the first time any kind of theater or this kind of production will have been done there. So we're just making
decisions
during the show there.
Are you still casting for the performers, or who do you have besides
Charles? No. We're good with performers, but, you know, we want our audience to be surprised. You got to come and see what other guest artists we have there. So when they get there, they'll be thoroughly pleased. I'll just leave it that way.
Okay, and I also want to step away from SF for a moment. SS Vana, because you have done other events. Would you mention some of the others that you are involved with?
Well, you know, I produce events, and as a matter of fact, I'm glad you mentioned that up because, you know, so many times people that I work with are people that I've never worked with before. Sometimes I have a history with them. Like I have a history with Lil. Lil is a jazz singer, and we've worked off and on over the years several times. As a matter of fact, we worked when I sent her to Istanbul, and she was there, I guess, for how long? A month?
Three and a half weeks, yeah.
3.5 weeks at a jazz club over there that I worked with, and she was part of my Great Woman in Music Festival over there. But my relationship with Charles Bartlett is longer and deeper because he was my 7th grade music teacher.
Wow.
I laugh every time Roz says that, and the reason why I laugh is because Roz used to sit in my general music class. I was a general music teacher and a band orchestral music teacher at the same time. But in my general music class, Roz would sit there, and she would talk. And I said to myself, this young lady is going to use her gift of gab in a professional way. I didn't know whether she was going to be an attorney or a newscaster. here it is, we come full circle. Full circle.
And you won't believe this, but his brother that he speaks of, Carl Bartlett, was my sister's music teacher at a completely different school. At a completely different school. That's right.
How interesting is that?
But here's what's more interesting. I'm only 29 and he's only 32.
Oh, he was teaching when he was a really young man.
I just don't know how it all worked out like that. But it just so happens that I am working with the Bartletts have, and I don't know how these numbers are going to mesh and mix, but the Bartletts have been making music for actually 50 years. Mm-hmm. And they're celebrating that this September 11th, 12th, and 13th. And it's a big, big, booming, expansive, beautiful weekend that they're going to be celebrating their 50th celebration, 50th anniversary.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, if I can interject.
Yes.
Yeah, basically, my brother and I started, I retired from teaching, teaching with the DOE, Department of Education. I wound up, however, teaching, being a professor at York College after, but that's another story. But actually, we started a foundation, and this is our inaugural event, identifying and introducing the foundation to the public at large. It's a foundation that will be providing services for students, seniors, and veterans. And, you know, as we all know, music education and the arts have been really cut and slashed in the cities, and we're trying to find a way to help help parents identify scholarships and just provide some musical and artistic services to the community at large. And doing that with the help of my brother and some folks that we're working with. And we hope it'll be a great night, especially September 12th. That's the main night to be held at York College. So hopefully everyone can come on and come aboard and come to the show at that time also.
And where is York College located, so people know?
York College is in Jamaica, Queens. And the show is September 12th from 5. It'll start at 5 and it will run to 8. And we're playing, most people know me as a jazz, let me just add this real quick and then I'll stop. Most people know me as a jazz musician because I'm a jazz trumpeter, studied with Jimmy Owens and a lot of famous jazz people. However, my band is a full service band. We do Beyonce, we do Bruno Mars, Uptown Funk, as well as we do Count Basie, Little Darlin'. So we cover the complete musical spectrum.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yes.
Quite marketable.
And as a special treat treat to that weekend, on the Sunday, so it's the meet and greet of this special 50th celebration inaugural weekend is the opening on the 11th with the meet and greet at the proper, I guess, as they call it, in Queens. And that'll be a meet and greet of probably of lots of people that have known the Bartletts over the years, kind of an intimate thing. And then the Saturday is the big date he just mentioned, the concert and the reception, the concert and the after party. But Sunday is going to be a jazz and blues jam brunch. And guess who's going to be there with Charles Bartlett as he does a little of his Louis Armstrong? Lil Phillips.
Looking forward to it, too.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So they'll do a little Dinah and a little Satchmo jam as part of the jazz and blues brunch. And, you know, that'll be a good time because that'll be the end of that celebration, time to start another one. And that would be a good time for you to pick up your tickets for SF Nirvana at Memphis Playhouse. That opens Tuesday, October 20th. Dinner and show included. And I got to tell you, the food at Minton is delicious. Delicious food.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what is the dinner fare?
How much is the whole show?
What are you serving?
Oh, well, you know, you have an option of either a chicken entree, a delicious beef entree, and if you're a vegetarian, we have a special vegetarian meal as well. So, you know, folks can always reach us at, should I leave the give the number where they can reach us?
Sure.
Okay, they can just call 646-373-3690, or they can go right to RozNixonEntertainment.com and get info from there. And of course, SS Nirvana has its own Facebook page, so that's always the best way to reach us and to find out more about the show and all the great songs we're covering, much like that song you just played, Sweet Georgia Brown, that's in the show, and Destination Moon by Dinah Washington, that's in the show. And, of course, you know, all the favorite Satchmo songs are in there. I don't want to let all the cats out the bag, but if you're into the New Orleans two-step, then you know that Satchmo will be doing his very special song in the show.
Well, now that you mentioned that, I want to ask Charles about, he mentioned that it was his first time doing Louis Armstrong, and as we know that Louis has a very raspy voice, was that difficult to capture his singing style and do his voice? Is that a strain on your voice, Charles?
It's a little strain because sometimes when I finish, I have to cough a little bit. That was his natural voice, singing voice, but it's certainly not his natural voice. So, yes, it's a little strain, but it wasn't really that. For some reason, I've sort of imitated a lot of people throughout the years, just in terms of their speaking voice. So it wasn't that difficult. I listened. Louis Armstrong, he played Dixieland and swing music. So the music I grew up on was really bebop music. So I had to go back and just investigate, you know, the sound, you know, his sound. I always liked him, but I really never studied it that deep until I was asked to portray him. So I had to go back to school a little bit and study his style, his technique of trumpet playing, his holding the notes, his vibrato, and, you know, the style that he played in, because he sort of introduced the solo style of jazz improvisation. At the time that he was starting, they did more of a collective improvisation style where all of the musicians played together. He sort of switched that around, and the focus was more on the individual. And since that time, you know, individual soloists have, he really, in my opinion, and in the opinion of many people, sort of like initiated that type of jazz improv where the feature was on the individual rather than the collective group.
Right.
Well, are you playing the trumpet as well on the show?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Absolutely, because in the show, and again, I don't want to give it away, but in the show, Louis Armstrong is just a passenger on the cruise. He was not part of the band. But when one of his good starring friends see him in the audience, they call him up. So he sits in Louis Armstrong or Charles Bartlett, a.k.a. Louis Armstrong. Mm-hmm. He sits in for the whole show, which then forces him to play on every song. So if you're a Charles Bartlett fan, not to worry. He'll be playing. He plays almost on every tune because he just sits in with the band. He asks them if it's okay for him to sit in, and he does.
Well, speaking of that, for the Louis Armstrong fans, I'm going to play one of his melodies.
Oh, okay.
Here
we go. That's funny.
Hello, Dolly, this is Louis. Dolly, it's so nice to have you back where you belong. You looking swell, Dolly, I can tell, Dolly. You still glowing, you still going strong. I feel the room swaying, but the band's playing our old favorite songs from way back when. So take a rap, fellas, find an empty lap, fellas. Dolly, never go away again.
That was.
and I don't even have to tell you that that's definitely in the show. Okay. But I got a little chill. I got a little chill when Charles said how Satchmo was one of the first people to put a spotlight on the individual player, because Carmen McRae said something similar. She said that Pops was really one of the first people to not only bring that individuality to light, but that was singing in that kind of, her words were, that kind of jazzy, hip kind of way. that he was doing and the way he would improvise and the way he would kind of finesse the words and so forth. So, I don't know if a lot of people know it, but, I mean, like, Louis Armstrong was really one of the first musical superstars, not mm-hmm. black,
yes, worldwide.
Just period, mm-hmm. period. Mm-hmm. One of the first superstars that could be in any motion picture he wanted to be on, could be on any television show he wanted to be on, could be at any award show, and he was highly respected. And here's something, one little last thing, let me say about Louis Armstrong, who's one of my favorite characters in the show, that in his declining years, I would say, when he was up in his 60s or about 60 or so, he was made an ambassador of music mm-hmm. and to travel all around Europe representing the United States. And this was put forth by the president of the United States, Eisenhower. And when they wouldn't let the students, the African-American students, into Little Rock, into school, he wrote a letter to Eisenhower, and he said, "You could just take me off the tour." He said, "If you can't, as the president, do what you have to do to get those kids into school, then, Mr. President, you can go straight to hell. I'm out." So,
that?
A lot of people, oh, yeah, it's written. You can see it at the Schomburg. You can,
oh, true.
It's written. It's very easy to find. He said, "You could go straight to hell. Take me off the tour. I'm not doing it." So a lot of people have this impression about Mr. Armstrong being one way or the other way, but when it came to the best thing for his people, that's what he was for, at the bottom line. The bottom line.
Mm-hmm. I might interject, Ross. A lot of times people didn't really understand that Louis Armstrong, he was living in a different time, and he had to feed his family also. So he had to do what he had to do during that time.
Right.
And I was talking to somebody about that recently that was upset with Ben Vereen for the role he mm-hmm. played in, was it in blackface, and they all got angry for years at him. Mm-hmm. But he was trying to talk about what we, as you just said, what some people had to do to live in that time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, none of our characters should be ashamed of. None of the people should support them all.
Definitely
but
not
Ross,
ashamed.
If you don't mind, I want to move on to talk to Lil for a minute because she's been pretty mm-hmm. quiet. Mm-hmm. I'd like to talk to her about her role as mm-hmm. Dinah Washington. Lil, it must be. How do you prepare? What do you do? What are the steps you take to prepare for your character?
Well, it's something that I've grown up with over the years. I did a tribute to Dinah Washington in 2008. And when I was working in Harlem for about 5 years at a restaurant called Wells, Lionel Hampton came up there because he loved the restaurant. And he came a few times. He told me, "You really remind me of Dinah." And I really took that as a big compliment because Hampton had a good ear for singers, and he discovered Dinah Washington, Joe Williams, and gave good breaks to Annie Ross and Betty Carter. So I felt I was in good company. I tried to build on that. The parts of my voice that I thought were like Dinah, I tried to emphasize in this case, although, as I say, I have my own sound. But I'm not trying to sound exactly like her, but I always loved torch songs. And Dinah's the only singer who can make me cry. Just listening to a song of hers, and I like that edge on her voice. That's what I always go for when I think of Dinah. And even when I sing my own songs, I like the edge. I like to reach people someplace where they're not looking, beneath the surface, besides the words, just the total feeling and the passion for life. That's what I try to draw my passion for life when I sing Dinah songs. Because I have that in common with her, that no matter what trials will come, I'm always going to go for life. Maybe that's why she married 7 times. She believed in love. She believed in life. And I do, too. So.
Do you try to make yourself appear as her? I mean, do you make yourself up or have a makeup person?
I will try my best.
Oh, yeah,
I will try my best.
Will.
Yes, because we're trying to recreate the period.
That's
we want to make those bigger, larger than life characters and the costumes, the songs, mm-hmm. and the vibrancy and of the legendary figures and the music of the time.
Yeah,
that's what we want to do.
Yeah, that's right. Let me just add to that, Deirdre, that in all of the artists are their own individual shows that they do and performances that they do. But in SS Nirvana, we are recreating the legends. So they sound and look like them. They look like them. They're dressed like them. They sound like them. Again, if you want to Google SS Nirvana, you'll see that all the New York press that reviewed us said that it is amazing how much they sound and look just like the artist. So that's what we do. There's no room for your own interpretation and your own story and mm-hmm. how your aunt likes mm-hmm. Sarah or this one or that one. And we are just like the artist in the show. Mm-hmm. To add on to what Lil said, I think she said it, but I don't know how if it was clear, that Dinah used to sing with Hamp's band, with Lionel Hampton's band. Mm-hmm. So if anybody knows who sounds like her, he knows who sounds like her. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna go with what he said and mm-hmm. go with Lil.
Well, okay? Now, Lil, I know that Roz just explained about what you're doing in terms of the character you're playing. But Charles mentioned that he's well-rounded. He sings or he performs in every genre. Is that, are you just to jazz, specifically to jazz, or do you also sing in other genres?
Also, yes. I love bebop. I sing bebop, and traditional jazz is my one I do most. I've done gospel. I've traveled all over Europe as a soloist and a choir member with different gospel groups for years. And let me see, gospel, R&B when I was young, but I haven't done that lately. I mainly concentrate on jazz and different parts of jazz, you know, the traditional, the bebop, and I tried to do some avant-garde a little bit. When I was younger, I did the West Indian songs, hello. back-to-back, belly-to-belly, yes, that kind of stuff, and I was a dancer, too. I was a dancer when I was younger, so. I did dance.
And you also mentioned that you performed in Istanbul, which is one of the largest cities in Turkey. It's rather unique in the fact that half the population lives in the European side and then the other half lives in the Eurasian side. When you were there, did you see that the people themselves had quite diverse tastes? What
yes,
did you, people are interested
did.
In things like that. So
but the,
tell me
I
about
think
that.
The Eurasian side was, the European side was stronger from what I could see in the culture. And I like that because that made them more open, you know, to us as foreigners. And yes, they were very accepting of us and they didn't put restraints on us. You could wear pants, you didn't have to have your hair covered. Only if you went to the mosque, you know, take off your shoes and cover your hair. But other than that, I thought they were great people. I enjoyed the country, the food. And
well, they say they're both Muslim and Christian. They're not they're not a strictly Christian, a Muslim country.
Right.
They're
yes,
Christian
and they were not
well,
strict
right.
strict Muslim because of their history. They have a leader who said he didn't want that the women to be suppressed like that. In fact, oh my gosh, about the time I was there, there was a big controversy about wearing the head wrap on the jobs. They didn't want the women to wear them. And it went to court. The judge who ruled that yes, don't they're not going to wear it. He wound up in a lot of trouble. That he got killed actually. But thousands and thousands of people came out to demonstrate after that, that they were on his side. That no, you know, we didn't want that strict Muslim
regulation.
Yeah, and one of the ladies I met who I traveled with a little bit around, one of my friends that I met, she said that she felt sorry for the ladies who were restricted like that, you know. So, no, they were very open, very open. It was a good place to go as a Muslim country, I believe. Very, very good.
Well, admittance that you're going to do a dinner theater, but the food that's in these foreign countries, did you have to sometimes acclimate yourself to the different tastes and things that are strange to most Americans?
No, I didn't. I eat a lot of different kinds of foods. I don't eat certain things because I grew up kosher, but different styles of food, and I like pepper, but we had a gourmet cook at that restaurant. My goodness.
All the acts that we sent over to Istanbul, they stayed, they were at a top hotel at
yes,
top,
like
that
four,
top
five
star.
Yes.
Was the 4 or 5 star hotels, mm-hmm. and they were at clubs that, you know, $1 million yachts could just pull right up to the
exactly.
club and step right off. And so they had the best of everything.
The best of everything. And we asked for what we wanted, and we got it.
I sent the women that, the bands that went over, it was an extension of a festival that I do here in New York in October called Great Women in Music. And so we would extend it after that by sending people over to Istanbul. So they were treated well, and they had the best of everything there. And they really were, especially like if they went Christmas, then they did at Christmas time, they didn't work on Christmas Day. They really worked around and answered to, you know, some of your questions, Deirdre. The company that I sent them or the club that they went over to in Istanbul really respected their American mm-hmm. and Christian mm-hmm. lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So whatever, okay. you know, whatever they were used to here is how they were treated there. You know what I mean? They didn't have to really adhere.
Acclimate themselves to the environment.
They didn't have to adhere to anything that was going on there if in fact it was something that they didn't do here.
No,
so,
let me ask this question of mm-hmm. any of you. Well, you know, jazz is truly an American music, but it is not always as greatly respected in the States as it is outside of the States. Did you find in your travels that the people in other countries knew more about jazz or appreciated jazz?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's more the opposite of what you said, actually. Europe loves jazz more. There's more love there. There's more money to be made there. Oh, absolutely. The other way around. We are a country that once something gets old, we want to go to the next thing and go to the next thing and go to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
We are in Paris, jazz is revered. They bow down to jazz artists, and they don't even have to be like famous, the famous
mm-hmm.
jazz
mm-hmm.
artists.
Mm-hmm.
But just the
let me expound on that point a little bit, so that's definitely something that close to my heart. As a former music teacher in the New York City school system and now a college professor at York College, I've seen, you know, the decline of jazz in terms of mainstream music. A lot of young people, when I say young people in their 20s and 30s, they're really not that keenly aware of historically where jazz fits. And a lot of, I told some of my former students, without the bebop, there wouldn't be the hip-hop. So mm-hmm. they don't understand the correlation, and I'm happy to say that, you know, Roz is really introducing this play and keeping jazz, helping jazz alive, along with some folks at York College, Tom's Lavender, and a bunch of folks over at York College. But I also have to say that in teaching, we try to reach young people. One of the people that I just want to mention, because he was in the play, my nephew Carl Bartlett Jr., who is a phenomenal saxophone player. If you get a chance to listen to him, Carl Bartlett Jr., he's out there. He was in the play earlier. Roz had him.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the saxophone players, the young saxophone player in the play. So I just wanted to bring that out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in other countries, Turkey, London. I mean, you can tell it better, Lil, because you know you and your husband, you traveled all over the world.
Yeah. And everywhere I go, there are musicians who have decided to stay there because they get respect, because they get paid. I think America likes to brag about jazz, but they don't want to support it, and maybe that's not
that's
the only
right.
art form they don't support.
And it's
in other
one
countries,
of the truly
they actually
American
support
art forms.
It's the only American
exactly
art form that I know about.
Sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know what? I always say, we don't know who started jazz. You know, we like to say that this one started or that one started, when in reality it could be your great great grandfather,
mm-hmm.
Lil, or Charles. It could be your great 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 grandmother or uncle or aunt sitting on the side of a shed playing some banjo,
mm-hmm.
playing it in the taking
mm-hmm.
the suffering.
Yeah.
And taking
yes.
the gospel
mm-hmm.
and putting it all together and
yes.
and saying it in some little jazzy way. But we know one thing, as you said, it is truly an American art form that comes from the struggle
mm-hmm.
of African people
blues,
brought to this country.
Blues. Who felt the blues more than people of color?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There you go. And that and all of it mixed all together.
Right. People try to disconnect it from Africa. People try to disconnect it from Africa. But I've heard African singers sing something that sounds like the blues.
Just like
and so, yeah. So the blues are roots that they came with us. And
yes.
They develop it, but the hardships that we had here are what helped us develop this kind of music. And one of the most important parts of jazz, of course, is improvisation. And like you said, with Nui brought that in, you know, that every individual gets to really express themselves. And that's definitely African, although I forgot, they did have it in Europe. They had that with the singers at some point, but they cut it off and they made everything written. But jazz, you have to, there's a form. Some people think it's just, you just go and start playing. No, there's a form. But within
that
form, yes. Okay, the teacher, let the teacher talk about this.
Wow, what can I say? Yeah, there's definitely a form, improvisation, all that. But in terms of the African, the link between Africa and jazz, I mean, rhythm, the rhythmic. I mean, nothing complex. The polyrhythms and the rhythms that come out of Africa, you know, has, you know, when some of those rhythms hit the States, some of these guys are like, whoa.
Whoa, yeah.
The multi-rhythms that go on, the dual rhythms at times that go on in the African tradition. So it was transferred over here, and a lot of the rhythmics that we employ right here, they are the 6/8 rhythm, for instance. Dun 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 dun. That's definitely, you know, rooted in Africa.
Yeah,
that's right.
I think other people realize that, and they accept it. The Cubans, where you know the Africans went through those places, they know that where those rhythms started. They know where they started. They don't say they.
Well, everybody
created
was
that.
On the ship. They were all on the slave ship. They were just dropped off on different
islands.
Different islands.
That's
yeah,
right.
Everywhere.
That's right.
They're all on the
Everybody
ship.
Everybody was on the ship.
And you put it all together, and you come up with jazz, and then you take it a step further, and you come up with SS Nirvana.
There you go. And speaking of that, I want to say that it's on Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 2 o'clock. Now, that's a matinee.
The time again?
2 o'clock.
2 p.m.
Mm-hmm. 2 p.m., which is a matinee.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, most people are at work. So then,
I don't know that there will be some people at work, but I don't know that most. But here's the thing: however you get to Broadway and you go to matinees, whatever you do, if it's on your day off or your birthday or your anniversary day, then you'll just have the same kind of follow that same kind of mindset and make it on over to Mitten. That's all. I mean, I know the Broadway theaters are filled on Tuesdays and Wednesdays at the matinees.
Right, and so. we fill the soul and the stomach. I mean, you're
That's
getting
right.
two for one.
That's right.
Well, what I'm trying to bring around is that you would probably appeal to many groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
tourists.
You would want to reach out to, like, different so you should mention that you know you're also available to large groups if they want to come and see the play.
Absolutely, groups of all ages. You know, I've been for many years. I've been writing about blues and jazz singers, and I have to tell you that my sister is also a teacher. And she has brought her class, whether it's junior high school, high school, elementary school, she's brought them to the shows. So all ages love music. You know, we don't want to think about this as some kind of a lost art. Mm-hmm. Jazz and the soul of jazz is in a little bit of everything that we do and a little bit of all the music that we hear. It's a bit of a learning process because you may learn some things about some artists that you didn't know that you love. And some of the stories involved in SS Nirvana are true stories. You know, there's a little bit of a story with Sarah Vaughan. Again, I'm not going to give it away, but, you know, Sarah could be quite a flirt. You know, during the times when she was married or not, she could be quite a flirt. And I remember one time I had gone to see Sarah, And I went with my 16-year-old brother. He was 16 at the time. Then my godmother. My godmother knew her, so she was able to get us backstage. And she was happy to see my godmother. And even though I'm her number one fan, and I mean I'm O'Sara's number one fan, I mean that in every way, even like in the Kathy Bates crazy. Although I wouldn't have hobbled her, but I would have definitely told her the roads were closed and she couldn't leave my house for days and days and days. But so she wasn't at it. She wasn't. She, you know, she was nice to me, but she.
Well, that's
was
now that's
really
now, that's a big fan.
Well, but
that's
but
a huge fan.
She,
if you're not gonna kidnap, if you're gonna kidnap her.
I would have told her that the roads were closed. You can't leave. Even if they were open. But my 16-year-old brother, who was tall and maybe looked a little bit older than 16, she really thought he was handsome. And so I took the little episode from what happened that day when we were in her trailer and her conversation with my brother, my 16-year-old brother, and I incorporated that in the show. So many, I don't want to give it away, but
don't give it away.
I'm not going to give it away.
Yeah,
but it was really funny, and I have to tell you that I had to really grab my godmother and say, "Don't say anything. Don't ruin this for me. This is the first time I've been this close to Sarah Bond," and so I don't think she appreciated it. But anyway, we incorporated that into
the
play.
Well, let me tell people. Let's tell people where Minton is, so when the people go, they know where to go. It's the Minton Playhouse, and what's the address?
Minton's is 206 West 118th Street, just at the corner of St. Nicholas Avenue in Harlem, USA.
All right, and that's every Tuesday and Wednesday up until the second week in November, did you tell me?
That's right, and then after the holidays, we're going to come back again. After Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's, we're going to come back again. Mm-hmm. But, of course, you know, you can always go to our SS Nirvana, Nirvana meaning heavenly and magically and feeling good. Or you can go to our SS Nirvana page on Facebook. com, and you get all the information, find out about tickets, or you could call 646-373-3690 for more information.
Well, now I was going to ask everybody, and I hope they will give me and their audience, listening audience, their websites, because if anybody wants to find out what you're doing, they can go to your website. So what is your website, Ross?
Well, they should go to, for SS Nirvana information, they could go to RozNixon at .com, or they could go to, again, Facebook, and they'll get all the information that they need. There's also an SSNirvana.com. They can go there as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and you, Lil, you have a website?
Yes, www.lilphillips.com.
And Charles? Mm-hmm.
Rebuilding the website, but I'm on Facebook, Charles Bartlett, Facebook.
Okay, so anybody wants to find out about you guys and what you're doing? Are any of you doing anything? I know the SS Nirvana is a matinee Tuesdays and Wednesdays. What do you guys do in the meantime or in between time? Are you doing other shows?
Well, I tell you what, I'm doing something every Wednesday night. I'm at a jazz spot. Manhattan proper in Queens. It's a little jazz mecca in Southeast Queens, and we have a jazz jam over there every Wednesday night. So I'm there just about every Wednesday night. It's on 217th Street and Linden Boulevard. And I will also add that every month, the first Saturday of every month, my church, St. Noble's Congregational Church, has a jazz vesper service, of which myself and my nephew, Carl Bartlett Jr., have participated in, because we both play at church. That's the other thing. I play in the gospel ensemble at church.
Okay, and what about you, Lil, because we're running out of time now.
Okay, every
you,
Sunday I sing with the Mother Zion Jazz Choir. I'm the director of the Mother Zion Jazz Society. We give jazz vespers and other jazz concerts. And
Mother Zion.
On September 20th, I'll be with the big band at Mother Zion, a big band from Tokyo, Japan.
Which is the oldest AME church in America, right?
AME Zion Church.
Yep.
Okay, I got to say goodbye to everybody because our time is going. So I want to thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
And again, encourage everyone to go on October 20th to Minton's Playhouse. And
right.
this is the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul. And I'm your host, Deirdre Shuler, thanking my listeners for making my topic top. We're going to end the show with Lil's part, and that's Dinah Washington singing What a Difference a Day Makes.
Thank you.
Thanks.
What a difference a day made. 24 little hours. What the sun and the flowers. Where there used to be rain. My yesterday was blue, dear. Today I'm a part of you, dear. My lonely nights are through, dear. Since you said you were mine. Lord, what a difference a day makes. There's a rainbow before me. Skies above can't be stormy. Since that moment of bliss, on your menu. What a difference a day made. And the difference is you.
And our guest today was Roz Nixon, Lil Phillips, and Charles Bartlett. And this is the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Souls.